From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Now, we hear that parents are not spending as much time reading with children as they used to, and children aren't spending as much time reading either, opting out for screen time. Today, we're joined by Maria Russo. She is the children's book editor from the New York Times Book Review. She's been a writer and editor at the Los Angeles Times and New York Observer, The Salon, and she holds a PhD in English and comparative literature from Columbia University. Russo has co-written the new book, How to Raise a Reader. Now, the book is divided into four stages of childhood, from babies to teens, so no matter what age your child is, it's filled with practical tips and strategies. And that been there, done that wisdom, and an inspirational advice from Maria Russo, as well as Pamela Paul. And we're happy to be joined by Maria. Welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, no doubt we know that with increased screen times, not just for our children, for us, if you look at your smartphone at the end of a day or week, it usually tells you that shameful amount of time you've been looking at it. Mm-hmm. And of course, some of us read books on screen, but what we want is to keep the love of reading a book cover to cover. How do we do that?
Well, it's true. Screens are an issue for all of us, but, you know, parents too. But just like we want a break from all the screens sometimes, you have to remember your kids do too. So it does come down to, are there books around at that moment that they really want to read, right? We know our houses have a lot of screens these days, but do you have a lot of books in your house? You know, when you have books in your house, you're creating opportunities for your kids to choose to read. We had a really interesting study we came across showing that just having books in your home is linked to a child becoming a lifelong reader. So that is, you know, that was a study controlled for income and education. It literally is something about having a lot of physical books around you that helps turn you into a reader. So that's a really encouraging and interesting thing to think about, right? That, you know, it's not really that expensive if you find books at tag sales and there are used books available really cheaply online. You know, you can bring those books into your house and find the right book for your kid too. Then you're really helping them to create a habit of reading that maybe, just maybe, can compete with the habit of looking at a device.
Maria, I'm so glad you said that, because my husband thinks that keeping books around that you've already read is something that collects dust. So I'm going to tell him that. And there is that something, you know, when your kids grow up, you love to keep their books that they loved as a child. And it just, as you say, contributes to that.
It does. And let's remember, kids are collectors. Kids like to collect things. It helps them create a sense of their own identity. You know, I'm a Harry Potter lover, or I love the Dog Man books. You know, they like to see them lined up on their shelf. Another thing you can do in your home is make sure your child has his own bookshelf or her own bookshelf, you know, or if space is tight, even just one shelf that's just for the kid. So they can really identify with the books that are there and choose the books that have that meaning for them. And you're so right. You know, when your kids grow up and leave that home and come back to visit you, they'll be so happy to see their childhood, that you've kept some of their favorite childhood books. It's really meaningful. And it really, you know, reinforces the power that a book can have in our growth and our emotional life. So, yeah.
I have my own collection of dog books in my bedroom, so I appreciate that, and I'm a collector, so I get at that.
Great.
What were some books that inspired you as a reader?
Oh, wow. Well, I grew up in the 1970s, so, you know, it was a different era. There weren't quite as many children's books as there are now. You know, we're really living in a golden age now of children's books, but some of the classics from my childhood that I go back to, I think, are still holding up. You know, picture books, obviously, the Where the Wild Things Are, you know, all the Maurice Sendak picture books, those still work on kids. They're still beautiful. They're powerful. My very favorite picture book was Sylvester and the Magic Pebble by William Steig, about the donkey who makes a wish, a mistaken wish, and is turned into a giant stone. It's just so, it's thrilling and sad and hopeful at the end when he finally gets turned back into a donkey and gets to go back home to his poor, bereaved parents. You know, that's just a fantastic book still. And then, you know, as I got a little older, I loved the Roald Dahl books, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I loved some of the lesser-known ones, like Danny, Champion of the World. You know, I think that the greats really do hold up, but it's also good to supplement the older books with some new ones that really speak to your child's world now, you know, that are made for kids today and the specific challenges and interests that kids today have.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I wanted to jump in and ask you. You know, I remember a lot of those books, and I have fond memories and was looking forward to reading some of those with my children. And as I started reading some of them, they just didn't connect with my kids, but they saw some of these new books that were out. And you're right, this is a golden age of children's literature. And they, you know, it doesn't connect with me, so I kind of have to sacrifice, you know, what I think they should be reading and
right.
sit down and read their stories. But how do we connect that divide between, you know, I want my kids to read this whole series of Narnia or Shel Silverstein to allowing them that opportunity to read their own choices?
It's really true. It's hard for me. The tragedy was that my daughter didn't like Little House on the Prairie, which was so important to me, and I really loved.
Me too.
But, you know, what I learned from that is that every reader is different, and she prefers fantasy. You know, she wanted to read fantasy books. So some of this is a great way to get to know your own kid for the individual person that they are. You know, she's just much more sort of brave in a way than me. She's never scared by a book, you know. And so I, you know, she read The Hunger Games. You know, that was a big debate in our house when she was just, I think, maybe 10 years old. My husband and I were like, no, 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 The Hunger Games. There's children killing children. That's just, you know, that's a bridge too far. And she really convinced us that she could handle it, that, you know, her friends were reading it. You know, she had some older friends. She was really interested, and she could handle it. And so we followed her lead. So, I mean, I think that's really what we're trying to do here is create kids who read voluntarily, right? Because that's another thing that the research is showing. Kids who choose to read, kids who read because they want to, because they have intrinsic motivation, are kids who do well in school. I mean, it's counterintuitive, but if we want our children to succeed academically and in life, in goal setting and reaching their dreams, you know, we have to help them become readers, voluntary readers, and that means not pressuring them. That means letting it come from inside them, letting it come at the pace that it's going to naturally come at, you know. And that one thing we talk about in the book is, you know, not every five-year-old is ready to read. Not every six-year-old is ready to read. Let your child start to read at the natural place for your child. You know, everyone has a different brain, and you know, parents of multiple children have probably noticed the girls tend to read sooner than the boys. It's just something about the male brain and the female brain. So, you know, what you have to support your child in their own journey to reading, and not be like, oh, but all the other six-year-olds are reading by now. What's going wrong? Just back off from that and let the teacher keep an eye on that. You know, although obviously you want to be on the lookout for signs of a potential challenge like dyslexia, even vision problem can be in the way. But in general, it's best to let reading become something that you keep watching your child for signs of what they like when they're ready for the next, you know, quote unquote level of reading.
And that's great advice. So I was a special ed teacher, reading specialist, and my daughter was premature, which has higher likelihood of reading disabilities and delayed learning. And she really struggled. She had difficulty with phonemic awareness and so forth. And we were concerned up through about first or second grade, and we backed off. And your advice is right on. And we backed off. She had a librarian who really inspired her, and she escaped into books. And every night, she reads almost a book a night.
It's fantastic.
It's amazing to see her come alive in books. But
it doesn't matter when they start.
Right, right. And that was hard. You know, as a parent, we have certain expectations we give each other, and we compete against other parents and so forth. And so we just kind of backed off, and it was great advice. But now she's 10 years old, and that's about where they're starting to find computer time, and even the schools are now giving them laptops. And how do you balance that? What do you suggest to me and to a lot of the nation that are struggling? Okay, my kid likes reading, but now the games are really coming on, and TVs and movies and so forth.
Well, one thing I can say is we are becoming a more visual culture. And books are reflecting that, too, with the rise of graphic novels that are really excellent. So I don't know if your daughter has discovered yet the graphic novels of Raina Telgemeier and Victoria Jameson and Shannon Hale. You know, girls about her age go crazy for these graphic novels. And, you know, the reason is that a lot of kids are what we call visual readers. You know, they're processing the images in a way that speaks to them more, just as powerfully as when they process the words. So they prefer a book that gives them some information in the pictures and some information in the words. And, you know, this is another prejudice that a lot of parents have. You know, just like parents think, oh, I want my child to read at age 5, they think, oh, I don't want my child to read graphic novels. But it's all part of the same decoding process. It's not, we don't, you know, we're encouraging parents to stop privileging, you know, just like a big fat word heavy novel over a really excellent graphic novel that is telling its story also through the images. So you might try some of those graphic novels I mentioned, you know, Roller Girl, I think she would probably get a kick out of, by Victoria Jameson, all the Raina Telgemeier books, you know, Smile, Drama. She has a new one called Guts that's about anxiety, that, you know, it's actually a memoir of her own childhood and her struggles with anxiety, which a lot of our kids are facing these days. These are really fantastic. And they're reading their books.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Maria Russo. We're talking about fostering a lifelong love of books from birth to teens. Her new book is How to Raise a Reader. And she is one of the co-writers of this book. And she's an editor of the children's book for the New York Times Book Review. I'm wondering, Maria, first of all, when you two were talking about those books that we love from childhood, my very favorite book from childhood is called Jerome, and it's about a frog who believes that he's been turned into a prince. I don't think it's been published. I grew up in the 70s like you, so I thought maybe you'd heard of it.
I don't remember that one, but I'm going to go look it up as soon as we're off.
Yeah, incredible illustrations. And, you know, I was lucky that my kids, I think my older son was in second grade, and he was an early reader. So when he was able to start grabbing Harry Potter. And so he grew up with the excitement and the exhilaration and the dressing up and the going to the bookstore at midnight upon each new release of Harry Potter. And, you know, that was so lucky. It made him just a lifelong reader. And you do mention that one of the things you talk about in your book is, what do we do after Harry Potter? And that, to me, was a golden age. But I know that there must be new series.
There's lots more. Yeah. You know, one thing we recommend for those Harry Potter lovers who are looking for the next thing is think about mythology. You know, a lot of fantasy series now for kids are based on mythology from around the world. And in fact, Rick Riordan, who is the author of the Percy Jackson books, I don't know, did your son get into Percy Jackson too?
No.
Usually those go maybe a little bit before Harry Potter. This is, you know, based on Greek mythology, right? And now he's created some other series. He's got one based on Norse mythology. He's invited in, he's got a line called Rick Riordan Presents, where authors from other cultures will share mythology. So there's, you know, Sal and Gabby Break the Universe. He uses, like, Mexican mythology from the ancient Mayan. There's one from Korea, you know, Korean mythology inspires, but it's just like in Percy Jackson and in Harry Potter, they kind of create their own world with kids who seem like our kids today, but sort of inspired by the mythology. So that's kind of an exciting development. You know, there's just There really has. You're right. Harry Potter was a big breakthrough moment for kids' books because it turned, one thing it did that you're talking about that was so great is it turned reading into this kind of communal thing that kids mm-hmm. did, that they shared with other kids, and they could kind of be out in the world as book lovers, you know, with their Harry Potter robes and even just kind of asking each other, what house are you in? You know, the identity.
Yeah.
And that was so important to making reading something that kids choose to do, right? So kids are on their own choosing to read Harry Potter because of that. And so we want to kind of keep that going and find other books. There's plenty of other books that they can choose that are just as powerful.
It's interesting that we talk about, well, we all know how much time we spend on screens. And I'm wondering if there's sort of a tact that you can take instead of telling your child, you shouldn't be looking at screens so much, and how about you go read a book? Changing that up to, I think what's happened to my younger son, who now is in sort of the working world and working on computers all the time, he is crazy about books because I think he just mm-hmm. wants that tactile experience,
right,
and holding a book, and it's really been wonderful to see him turn on to reading in a way that I haven't seen him previously. And so what do you say about that? You know, how to say, oh, it's so great to hold this book in my hands. It feels
so really
good.
Is. Another strategy that you could try with a kid who's really, you know, not just making that leap into reading is to remember, just like we have the visual readers, we also have some kids who prefer facts, who don't want to always escape into a story, or maybe even never want to read a novel. So broaden your idea of what constitutes a book. I mean, first of all, there's great nonfiction for kids being written now. All of the great grown-up bestsellers are being edited down and published now in the Young Readers Edition, you know, so keep your eye out. If you loved a book, you see a bestseller, you know, in the library or the bookstore, look for the Young Readers Edition, you know, for that teenager. And I'll tell you my secret, I like these better. They cut out all the fat from, you know, some of these too long grown-up books, but they have to keep the essence of the book, so they're fantastic. You know, and then also just fact books that aren't even narrative. Some kids just want, you know, the Guinness Book of World Records. I mean, some kids will, you know, that is just a tried and true book that you can put in the hands of a kid and he will just spend some time there. You know, with my 9-year-old son, you know, we get him the sports books, the yearbook, NBA 2018, you know, so, you know, they do it every year. Scholastic does a lot of these books, you know, for the sport that they love. And they can just kind of go through the statistics and some of the stories. And that's reading, you know, also an atlas, you know, my son also really likes having an atlas in his room and just kind of looking at maps now and then. So keeping your mind open to that kind of thing. I mean, let's face it, this is the sort of thing that the internet is great for, right? It's just information. It's giving kids information. What are they doing there, you know, a lot of the time? And you can get books that give them that same delight in discovering things. And also even, you know, it doesn't all have to be serious, you know, stuff. We have, you know, those weird fact books, you know, weird but true, or even like gross but true. You know, National Geographic does a ton of these books. Kids love those, you know. So keeping a couple of those around and, you know, putting those in your kid's hand at a moment when, you know, they could be going on the device, that is a good thing to try too.
And this is all amazing. I mean, I'm taking notes here because this is great for me as a parent. So thank you so much. Really appreciate all of your wisdom.
You're welcome.
The book is How to Raise a Reader, our guest, Maria Russo. Thanks, Maria.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows wherever you find your podcast. You can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.